participation session of the ASA meeting, and we're going to start off our talk with nature study of kindergarten through 12 with Kimberly Dawes, and she's a registered dietitian, homeschool teacher, and you're working with, what was the group?
The organization is called Childlight USA, and I'm a volunteer member on the science curriculum committee there.
Okay. We'll listen to Kimberly. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Nature study. Why would one want to do nature study? My son asked that question this afternoon. The sermon that we had today was really quite interesting, but it viewed nature study as a way of viewing God's nature as a way of viewing God's creation. But we do nature study in order to teach the child to observe. In order to understand nature as it really is right now. Nature is no longer Eden. It is fallen. And a child who does a rigorous nature study will see that there's some odd things in nature. Nature is not perfect. We're no longer in Eden. But a light view of nature study leads to romanticism. And this is a problem that we've had in nature study in the past. Consequently, in this day and age, public schools no longer use nature study. It was used in the past. And in this presentation, I would like to tell you a little bit about how you might do nature study for K through 12 and discuss how you as a group can contribute to the nature study effort. Well, nature has gotten really popular right now. We've got Michelle Obama with her school garden. We've got books like this, Last Child in the Wood, that coined the phrase nature deficit disorder, basically saying children are no longer getting outside. There's a popularity of doing nature journals, but in the Senate there's also a bill called No Child Left Inside Act of 2009, which is proposing mandating outdoor education for public school children. Why is it that we don't do nature study? I would contend it's been a battle between romanticism and utilitarianism. Historically in the United States, the girls had a fair amount of science education. There was utility to it. And when I'm talking about girls, I'm talking about the upper class girls that got education beyond what the mother taught from a book. They went to academies. For these women, they were expected to be able to manage a plantation while their husbands were off doing government jobs, preaching. And the boys would get an education in classics. But things changed for the girls. The girls, instead of getting what we call science, started to get an aesthetic view of nature study. They were expected to learn to study delicate flowers and insects. But then it even got dumbed down even further. And there's an example of this in a book called The Herbarium. It is a facsimile you can purchase through Harvard Press. And it was done by Emily Dickinson. She pressed 424 plants. And on this beautiful book, all that's listed is the name of the plant in English and Latin. There's nothing about the date it was found, where it was found, anything that would be of any utilitarian use at all. It was strictly for aesthetic purposes. Much like some girls would be able to do these beautiful samplers, and yet they would not know how to make a dress. The best is if you could do both. The guys in high school were getting some science still because of a need for science and factory machine work. Nature study then became rigorous again. What happened is that there became a movement called the Nature Study Movement, started at Cornell University in the College of Agriculture, and a female was chosen to lead that. The girls would get nature study. The boys got both nature study And they also got science courses for engineering, mining, and mechanics. But something happened to Nature Study. It got moved, the Department of Nature Study got moved to the Department of Home Economics. And again, it became simplified. There still were some benefits to that. The number of girls who took Nature Study in the high school levels, it was directly correlated with an increase in girls interested in teaching biology in high school. So that by 1925, 67% of all high school biology teachers were females. At the same year, in a survey of high schools, 100% of high schools had a Nature Study course. Boys took the Nature Study, but it became less appealing because it became associated with feminine study. The boys did have an out, and that was called scouting. They got exposed to scouting, and they enrolled in scouting in much higher numbers than the girls. Part of what happened with Nature Study at this period is there became a war between aesthetics and utilitarianism. This is exemplified by philosophies, two different philosophies that we show here. One of the philosophies was by Charlotte Mason. The other is the Nature Study movement. For Charlotte Mason, who was a British educator, all school children and all the children that were working, remember, very few children at this point in time went to school on whatever the compulsory education age was at that time. Many children attend, no longer went to school. So she advocated scouting clubs for these kids so they would learn about nature. The Nature Study movement promoted nature study so that rural children would become interested in agriculture. Charlotte Mason had the view you did nature study and science. And nature study was done starting in preschool or by the mother, would continue in grammar school. Science began in third grade, and that's a very contemporary idea. In fact, the Singapore and in Hong Kong today, the children do not begin to take science until third grade, and by the fourth grade, they beat the pants off of Americans on the TIMSS exams, which is the trends in science, science and mathematics. I can't remember what the last S was, survey. So she also felt that students need to develop their own understanding of science through nature study. You observe something, then you read about it in books. You consult with naturalists, geologists, whoever might come into the nature walk. For the nature study movement here, there was a war between the idea is you study nature, not books. In other words, enjoy the aesthetics, but don't get any information about it. Or there was the secondary view is you study nature with books. An example of this is the Handbook of Nature Study, which is still in print. But this is a book for the teacher to study about nature, to teach nature to the children. And the children don't do their own work in finding the information. That battle of philosophies is still going on today, and that may mean whether nature study, if people start doing it again, survives or dies again. But basically, during the period of World War II and Sputnik, nature study died. You would not find it in public schools. I don't think any of us had a nature study course, unless perhaps you went to those rare private schools that still offered them. The reason behind this is the science became associated with military applications, and nature study didn't inform that. The educational reformers saw books, not observation, as a way to organize science and keep the boys in school. That seems laughable to me because I think boys like to handle things and do things, but they had that idea. So our education was primarily by books and not by going out and doing things. Grants were awarded to men, and so the number of women in science declined. And the women, of course, were pushed more into home economics and less in the science fields. So we most of us never had nature study, but there's a resurgence right now. We see that in the Charlotte Mason movement. Charlotte Mason has several books that are out, and there's some organizations that are promoting her educational ideas. You see it in part in classical Christian schools, Montessori schools, and Waldorf schools. The Waldorf schools, in particular, have a romantic idea of nature study. The school garden movement was started by Alice Waters. And then, of course, we have the No Child Left Inside Act, which may mandate outdoor education. Nature study informs science. That's why we want to do it as scientists. There's something about going out and seeing the real thing that helps you to understand something when you read it in a book. It also teaches you the skills of the observation. And so in nature study, the children are doing direct observation in situ in the child's own environment, their backyard, their neighborhood, their schoolyard. And the more they see, the more they begin to see. It's very concrete. It's usually out of doors, and the finds are recorded in the child's own book. We have samples of books that you can look at later. These belong to the child. They don't belong to the school. And so they are free to write information that they see on their own time in these books. Nature study teaches you to think locally and act locally. You're observing how man impacts nature in your own backyard, in your own neighborhood. And as you do that, you learn how to care in your own neighborhood. Science is a little bit different, and nature study and science can inform each other. Science, you learn from the predecessors' ideas, observations, and theories. You can do distance learning about giraffes, lions. You know, you can do these webcams. They're wonderful. But they're kind of impersonal. You're not going to see those unexpected things, only what you just happen to see at that moment when you're looking at it. Science extends learning with experimentation, and it develops if-then thinking. So, let's say you want to do nature study. How would you start with, let's say, a preschool child? Well, first, let them burn off energy, because they're not going to observe anything until they're a little bit calmer. You send them out on an exploring expedition. Who can see the most? And then you expect them to come back and tell you with some accuracy what they saw. If they didn't, you send them out. That trains their eyes, trains their ability to tell you and observe. You can also do seasonal observations like they adopt a tree. And they'll see flowers, they'll see leaf falling down, they'll see the formation of seeds, and that helps the observation skills. Here is an example of a preschool nature study, insect on a sidewalk. Notice the child only writes a little bit. For elementary school, what would be different? Well, I suggest there should be a theme for the term because variety creates interest. If you don't, the child chooses the same thing over and over again, and usually that's flowers because flowers don't move. They're easy to draw. I suggest once a week, but realistically, once a month if you can do it. Have a nature notebook that the child keeps. They can date and mention the location of their find, and you can use any tools you have, watercolor, pictures, photos, etc. Okay, here's an age 7. Notice the child has done some of the work here. And the mother or teacher can write a narration. The child tells what they've learned, but if they can't write well, the parent helps out. The drawings are done by the child, though. Here's an example of clouds. What drives this is the child goes out one day, paints the cloud they saw. Cumulus cloud, clear sky. Here's a mare's tails, and the picture's not very good, and there's two more. These are different dates, and they observe the changes themselves and then research what they're called. Here's an example of feathers collected from a birdcage. After that, they start labeling and adding their own information of what they learned. Here's an example of a field survey. They took leaves all on the same day and learned the names of them, from the trees that the leaves came from. And then if you have a theme for the semester, like you have a theme on trees one semester a term, have a theme on erosion, have a theme on weather. It does not need to be living. But if you have a theme, if something exciting happens, interrupt it. And this is an example of an earthquake that happened in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, which never has earthquakes. And the child was able to record the actual time that she felt the aftershocks. Okay, if a new child has never done nature study, their first entries will be simple. If you notice the dates here, this is October, then December, and December, so start slow. For middle school and high school, they can do more. They can add the time, weather conditions, the unique characteristics of what they're studying, and the human impacts and disturbances that they notice. In other words, the older they get, the more they see, the more they describe. An example of a 12-year-old, here's metamorphosis, a chrysalis and a monarch fly, and the location was at a butterfly ranch nearby. Here's someone the first year. Again, your first year, make it simple, but you notice they have a fair amount of description. An example of an experienced child, she has the date, the name, the Latin name, and information about the plant themselves. And then lastly, we have a drawing and then lots and lots and lots of detail about the plant, the habitat, how to grow it. The older they get, the more they can do. Additional things with middle school they can do is have a first sighting list. They can write what they have learned for younger children. And actually, children who do that, they take information of what they've seen and learned, and they translate it for younger children, actually remember and recall more than if they're regurgitating it for their teachers. They can do community service. Becca and I are going to be doing monarch tagging in October, and that makes you a part of the worldwide scientific community. And there's lots of after-school programs. One I particularly like is a Master Gardener, a Master Naturalist certificate, and you can become a certified beekeeper. Okay. What can we as an audience do? Well, if you're a parent, you can just get started, even if it's 1 month and then waiting another month or whatever. Just try it out. Maybe the parent can keep their own journal also. But we as scientists and educators, ASA has put out a call that they want us to start reviewing science books and submitting reviews to them. And when they get to that point, they want them. They will tell you. But why don't you get started? Think, you know, pick up a book in your specialty field. Say, is it accurate? Is it interesting? Would your child benefit from that? And when they call for the reviews, submit it. Know your own neighborhood habitat. Get out and know your own neighborhood. Then you can volunteer in a local school and homeschool co-op. If you're in a university, consider developing a university field study, like a Maymester study, because most of your college students will have never done outdoor work. Okay, and consider citizen scientist opportunities for all, but especially what we need is evidence-based research. Does nature study make a difference? Does it increase scientific understanding? And does it increase vocational interest in science? I would contend that it does. But I don't have the research to support that. Some resources. The organization I'm working with is called Childlike USA. There are some things about it on the website, Nature Study on the website. You can contact me. I have a big, huge list of links. And I even have extensive notes, and if you want that in a particular area, I would be glad to supply that. And then if you're looking for primary sources, Ambleside Online does have that. Are there any questions?
Yeah, one.
Okay.
Yes. Would you repeat the question again for me so I can get it on the tape?
Okay, that is a question I think we'll need to answer back and forth. But if you look at the origins of Waldorf school and some of the beliefs in Waldorf schools, you will find that there's very, they call it esoteric, but I would almost call it satanic beliefs. And for instance, they believe the child came across a rainbow free of sin, came into the world, and you're trying to have them a very protective environment so they're not contaminated by sin. There's a lot of beliefs like that in the Waldorf movement. But however, they are very much into aesthetics and beauty and very appealing to a lot of people.
Are there any more questions?
Yeah, would it out into a local museum be qualified for being outside?
I'm sorry, what is it?
Would an outing to a museum qualify?
We actually love museums, but the more frequently you go to the museum, the more they benefit. The danger with the museum thing is that the kids go, and then they're rushing from exhibit to exhibit to exhibit, maybe filling in the blank, and they're not taking that information, absorbing it, and then putting it in a form that makes sense and promotes learning. So it depends on the museum. Some museums are more learning-oriented, others are not. I prefer to go to a museum for a very short time, see a few things, go away, absorb what you've learned, rather than seeing the whole museum. Is that the question?
Yes, but of course different museums do it different ways.
They do.
There are places where you can sit down just for kids and investigate.
Right. Well, an exploratory museum is an example of that, and some of those are very good museums. Others are you read the captions, you see a picture, and then you run off to the next one. So it depends. The more experiential, the more the kids learn.
Do you think the increase has occurred, the resurgence in nature study, because of the homeschool movement in particular? What are the driving forces? And then the issue after that is, if that's the case, then how do we replicate that outside of the homeschool movement?
Okay, well, I see both the public schools and the homeschools interested in nature study right now. The battle is the battle of ideas. Does nature study feed directly into science? How much studying should you do versus, oh, this is wonderful, this is beautiful, let's draw a picture? How much do you add to that, to the kid's own search for understanding of what they see?
Because a lot of educators would say, at the early ages especially, it's enthusiasm, excitement, ooh-ah, wonder, amazement that drives the interest in science, because the brain's not ready to actually learn the facts as early on. But then a few years later, all of a sudden there's this blossoming of synaptic connections, and now the child's ready to learn quantitative and qualitative details.
Yeah, well, if a child has seen a chrysalis and seen something crawl out of it and see it fly away, and in our case it was a moth, and as it was flying, birds dive-bombed it. Okay, you see that whole process, then when you read about it, it makes a lot more sense.
But I would comment to that, too, that there's two aspects of, I agree partly what you're saying, but the other aspect of it is environment shapes. I mean, there's always this gene-environment correlation and interaction. And the more you're exposed to, you're activating areas that might not be activated until later, just from the genetic perspective.
Okay, one last question we probably need to move on.
I would comment on that. I would keep in mind that God himself taught Adam about nature by, in Genesis 2, by bringing the animals to him to see what he would call them. So if you look at God's pedagogy, this is a...
Of course, one might argue that the use of Adam revealing an adult rather than a child.
Yeah.
That's it. Well, thank you very much for a very wonderful presentation. By all means, please feel free to talk with her later on. There'll be time at the end of the session.
Okay.